Hi, you're listening to episode 1 of the Women in Depth podcast. Hi, and welcome back to the podcast. Today, our guest is Sabrina Santa Clara. Sabrina is a licensed professional counselor and the co-owner for the Center for Integrated Wellness in Las Vegas, Nevada. I think you're really going to enjoy this conversation with Sabrina because we're going to talk about an experience that many women can relate to but isn't really talked about, and that's the experience of loneliness. Another aspect that makes Sabrina's approach to working with her clients really unique is that in addition to traditional therapy approaches, for example, talk therapy, which is what most people think about when they think of therapy, Sabrina also integrates non-traditional approaches that are really considerate and sensitive to the person in therapy and what they need and what works best for them. So she really has a lot of tools for supporting the clients that she works with. So I'm looking forward to this. I think we'll learn a lot and be inspired. Hi, and welcome back to the Women in Depth podcast. Today, our guest is Sabrina Santa Clara. Sabrina is a licensed professional counselor and the co-owner of the Center for Integrated Wellness in Las Vegas, Nevada. Sabrina is a licensed professional counselor who approaches counseling and therapy from a mindfulness-based, holistic, and creative perspective. Hi, Sabrina. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Lourdes. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's an honor. Thank you so much for being here. I have really been looking forward to our conversation. I just wanted to start out first by asking you to tell us a little bit more about yourself and your practice.
Well, I've been in Las Vegas for just over a year. My practice I share with my co-owner, Gina Abaduda. We are both advanced internal family systems therapists. We both use a creative and mindfulness-based approach to therapy and incorporate spirituality within the therapeutic process. So we are not your traditional therapists.
Yeah, I noticed that one of your areas, that those the non-clinical approach to counseling and therapy. Can you tell me a little bit more about what some of those approaches are or what that entails?
What do you mean, the non-clinical approaches to counseling?
Yeah, that utilize in your practice?
Yeah, well, when I say non-clinical and we think about clinical therapy, we think about sort of all the things that we learn in our training in psychotherapy, such as traditional counseling and talking. And non-clinical perspectives are we use things like aromatherapy, and we use smudging and shamanic journeying. We also use a lot of creative arts. And while creative arts now is certainly recognized as a valid form of clinical intervention, it's certainly not traditional. I am also a Santray therapist, so we use Jungian approaches. I am also a massage therapist, so I sometimes use touch with my clients. So we will incorporate whatever it is that we think is going to be most helpful for the client.
Wow, that is really unique and really looks at the healing process from really a lot of other perspectives that don't get a lot of attention in the therapy world. And I think that that's really exciting that you're offering that here.
There's also this piece, I think, with I'm kind of using the quote marks, with non-clinical approaches, is that they're more inclined to use culturally appropriate methods. So when we have clients that come in from different cultures and their traditional method of healing might be using a curandera, if it's something that we have training in, then we will incorporate that. If it's not, then we will contract out and we have a shaman that we work with and we have other people that we work with to provide those kind of interventions that are culturally appropriate to our clients.
So really being sensitive to the support that will resonate with the client.
Exactly.
And being open to that and bringing that in as part of the healing process.
Right.
Now, you had mentioned before earlier that you also incorporated touch into therapy. And I'd like you to speak a little bit more about that because I am positive that that probably brings up a lot of questions for listeners and also probably for other therapists. So could you speak a little bit more about what that means and what that looks like?
Yeah, I actually have developed a training where I train other clinicians in the use of psychotherapeutic touch. So in the world of psychotherapy, there has been a lot of misinformation about touch, and I think a lot of fear around the misuse of touch because it has been misused. But what we know about touch, what every single one of us knows, when a child cries, our first instinct is to pick up that child and to rub their back. That is our natural use of touch that we use in order to help calm and soothe. And for many of our clients who have been untouched and have not been soothed and have had that rupture between physical contact, that physical contact can be a valid way of helping to repair that wound. It is certainly a touchy subject because right. You really have to be trained well for this. You really now have to know how to really attune. And there are a lot of kind of rules and indications and contraindication. It's a much larger topic than I can speak to right now. But what I can say is that when I do use touch with clients, it is not always people, when they think touch, they think hands on, like a massage. Whereas, right. You know, I may be teaching a client how to attune or how to actually feel in connection with someone else. And so it may be that we may be seated back to back and our backs may be touching and I may be guiding the client to breathe with me so that as we breathe in, our backs touch a little bit more. And as we breathe out, that there becomes that separation. So I'm working on this connection piece that happens at the physical level. And that's part of, I think, what is so often missed in traditional psychotherapy is that we're so focused on this sort of prefrontal cortex brain thinking part. And when reality, yeah. It's the thinking part that has sometimes gotten us into trouble. You know, I jokingly call that the curse of consciousness, you know, how we loop and loop and loop and loop around ourselves. And part of the work is to get out of that overemphasis of the prefrontal cortex and our thinking brain and to really connect that brain with our physical body and our spiritual selves.
Yeah. I think, too, that when you were speaking about the emphasis on the thinking function, how that also keeps our clients disconnected from their feelings, you know, just not really being able to know what they're feeling, to know the nuances of what that feeling is and what it means. Because I know that, you know, with your background with internal family systems or what's also been referred to as parts work or parts psychology for our listeners and for other therapists, that's also the emphasis or I guess the attention or honoring of those different parts of ourselves that we can't pay attention to if we're just stuck in our thoughts.
Right.
So, Sabrina, one of the things that I wanted to focus on today, and I was really, really excited about because I have seen this with my clients, and it's not that I think that females are the only ones who struggle with loneliness, but I was very intrigued that you focus on the experience of loneliness, and I wanted to ask you to share a little bit more about why this area is so meaningful to you.
Well, there's a couple of things I'll say. First of all, I agree with you. I don't think it's specific to women. I think certainly single men have been shown to have huge rates of loneliness. However, they're not the people who tend to come into therapy. Women are more inclined as individuals to come into therapy. Men, in my experience, come into therapy more often at the instigation of a partner. Not always, but certainly, you know, it's part of the cultural prohibition against having need and vulnerability that prevents a lot of men from coming into therapy. So I don't think it's exclusive to women by any means. It's something that I have certainly been working with a lot lately because I've been seeing it a lot in my practice. And I think it's true that it exists everywhere, but being new to Las Vegas and having worked in other communities, I have to say that it is more dominant here than I have ever seen it in my practice previously. I don't know if it's something about the Las Vegas culture, but it is something that I'm seeing here quite a bit. And it's also something that I've had to work with in my own practice, in my own individual practice, and have really dived into about what it means and where does it come from and how do I work with this part of me that can sometimes get overwhelming and sometimes take over sort of all these other wise parts of me. And where does that come from? And what are the tools that I can use to help ease that suffering?
So when you have explored, you know, the meaning of loneliness, where it comes from and what it's there to tell you, and also what you've seen in your work, what are some of the answers to some of those questions you just kind of posed right now about what it means, where it comes from? You know, even maybe I should back up a little bit. What is loneliness and how does it show up? Because I think maybe a common assumption is a person who is lonely is alone, but the truth is you can be very lonely with many people. So maybe starting with what is loneliness, would that, could
so
you start
how,
there?
I guess how I would define it is loneliness is a sense of disconnection. It's a sense of disconnection from ourself. It's a sense of disconnection from the greater something. Call it God, call it Buddha, call it the divine, whatever you want to call it. I firmly believe that we all need a sense of something larger than ourselves. And for some people, that looks like God. And for some people, that looks like Buddha. And for some people, it's science. And for some people, it's nature. But there is something intrinsically in our psyche, spiritual being, that requires us to need a larger context. And when we lose that larger context, that's when the loneliness arises. Now, I have a sister who's completely atheist, and her family is her God. Her family is the sacred something bigger, and that works for her. So it's a disconnection between ourselves, our something bigger, and a disconnection from our community. Right? So if we are not connecting to people and actually just doing things and having fun as social creatures, we need that. It is intrinsic to our sense of okayness.
So what I'm hearing is loneliness happens when you are disconnected from yourself, from the world, from something larger than yourself. Mm-hmm. And that this something larger really can look very different for anyone.
Yeah. Part of the work of easing loneliness then is to look at all those areas and work with each of those areas because they will all be affected, right? If you are disconnected from spirit, generally speaking, you're going to have a disconnection in your deeper self. If you're disconnected from community, generally speaking, it will develop into a disconnection to yourself. And so we look at all of those sort of aspects, disconnection from the other, disconnection from the divine, disconnection from my own spirit, and look at how do we reconnect to those internal and external communities.
So it's a process of reconnecting and then engaging. Sounds like that's a process of being engaged in living and engaged in being.
And there's also an aspect, I think, for those of us, you know, there's different sort of levels of loneliness. Loneliness is a normal human experience. We all feel it from time to time, just like we all feel anger or sadness or, right? And so there's nothing sort of inherently not okay about feeling it. It's really when it becomes that overwhelming, bottomless well. I have a client that describes it as a black hole. When it gets to that big, big, bigger than me state, then we're usually looking at primary wounding. Then we're usually looking at attachment wounding.
So the experience of loneliness, you know, for example, like the different levels also can indicate where it's connecting back to and where to begin the healing process.
Right. So we can all experience them. So I could be, you know, a person who doesn't normally feel lonely, and then I come to a new community and I don't have a community. And I'm going to feel that experience of loneliness. It's normal. It's natural. It's healthy, right? When it gets to that level of I am now curled up in a fetal position and feeling that sense of sort of hopelessness and it's never going to change and unlovableness, then we're really looking at usually early childhood wounding. Not always. The wounding can happen later in life, but usually it's some kind of attachment wounding. So for those of you who may not know attachment wounding, we're talking about primary caregivers and the way they were or were not able to appropriately attune to the child.
And could you speak a little bit about what attuning to the child would be, Sabrina?
Yeah, attuning is, if you hear that word attuning, it really speaks to, it's using the musical language, right?
Right.
So it's when there is concordance with, let's say there's five musicians in the room, it can be a cacophony or it can be a concordance. There can be a meeting of each other, a synchrony. And so when we look at that parental-child relationship, or really any kind of our relationships, right, we've all had relationships lovers or friends that could not attune to us. They couldn't hear us. They couldn't feel us. And when we were with them in our vulnerable states, did not feel met.
Yeah.
And so as an infant and as a child, that need to really be seen, to be felt, to be understood, to be met is critical because it sets us up for a lifetime of believing that the world is a safe place to be that receives me, or the world is a place where I cannot get my needs met.
And I think, you know, what you're saying also just speaks to the difficulties that we have in general of allowing ourselves to even be seen because of the messages that we've internalized or taken in
Absolutely.
About what it means and what it says about ourselves when we actually show up. And I just think that's really meaningful and significant.
It is critical. You know, this piece I think that about the wound of not being seen is probably one of the biggest ones that I think most of us as therapists work with. You know, that most of our clients come in not really, really ever being fully seen. And that is incredibly scary because if you're fully seen, you know, if you put an image of yourself up and someone doesn't like you, well, you can kind of convince yourself, well, they didn't like me because I had the image. But if you show up with all your vulnerability and this is everything that I am and somebody turns away, that's
yeah.
And when you're a child, that's all you have. All you have is vulnerability.
Right.
All you have is your authentic self.
And so I think there's a lot out there right now online and just, I guess, out in the world right now about being authentic and authenticity. Right. It's a huge buzzword right now. Right. And I think that oftentimes the work and the deep meaning beneath really being authentic is so much more complicated than is, I think, sometimes communicated. I mean, you just can't be yourself. Just ask for what you want. Just show up. Because, again, if that didn't go well as a child, it's not just as simple as show up now. There's a process to bringing out that part of you and stepping onto the stage. And I think that when you get used to going through life not being seen, then you get used to being in relationships where there isn't that alignment or that congruence or that attunement because you're just used to that now. And that becomes normal.
And there is some truth to that. It is not always appropriate to be authentic. You know, we have parts of us that come in and step in front for a reason. You know, if I think my boss is a jerk, it's probably not appropriate for me in that moment if I want to keep my job and pay my rent and take care of my kids to be in my best authentic self and say, hey, you're a jerk.
Right.
We don't want to use that idea of being authentic as a way to then castigate ourselves for when we are not. You know,
and
authenticity requires a certain amount of safety.
Yeah. And I think part of the work is in being able to discern when it's the right time to be seen and when it's not. And I think many of us struggle with that. And I certainly see that with clients. So, Sabrina, could you share a little bit about what you perceive as some of the myths or misunderstandings that people have about loneliness?
Well, I think the thing that I see the most of is that almost everybody that comes in where we work with the loneliness wound is there's often a sense of shame around it, right? So if loneliness becomes equivalent to I'm a loser.
Yeah.
You know, because we live in this sort of kind of ridiculous hyper independence Western culture, which, you know, is the pull yourself up by the bootstraps. You should be able to do everything on your own. And that's just not true. It's contrary to our very rudimental and basic biology, which is that we need each other. We do not do well when we are alone.
Yes.
And
there's
reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, that is something that there is actually, you know, a lot of research to back that up with emotionally focused therapy and attachment theory, how we are relational creatures. And as a child, you needed others to survive to meet your basic needs. But even as adults, other people, you need relationships.
And I think that there is, you know, a connection with this loneliness, with the sense of unlovableness, you know, and so there's this myth that comes along with that of, first, you have to love yourself. And there's some truth to that. And also, the other side to that truth is we learn to love ourselves as infancy, how it's supposed to work out, is we learn to love ourselves because we have someone loving us.
Yeah.
And then we internalize that lovingness, right? And so when we say, hey, you have to love yourself first, and hey, just love yourself, it simplifies a rather complex process. But yes, it's true. The process of learning ourselves is there. And in some ways, that's what therapy does. You know, is that I am loving my clients. It is not a paid relationship. You can't pay for my love. You pay for my expertise, but you can't pay for my love that I give willingly.
Yeah.
And that is a critical part of, I think, what heals a client is just having somebody there that says, in all my authenticity, whether you pay me or not, I'm still going to love you. I'm still going to care.
Yeah.
And so this idea of a therapeutic relationship that is one step back, I don't find it to be very effective or very authentic. Yeah. It certainly doesn't work for me. I don't find it as effective for my clients.
Because in that therapy relationship, you know, you are seeing your client, they're being seen, they're vulnerable, they're showing up, and to experience acceptance, love, and that feeling that all of you is beautiful and necessary and perfect in all of its flawedness, right?
Absolutely. And even our parts that are challenging, our behaviors that are challenging, you know, they're there for a reason. You know, addiction is not something to be critiqued. Addiction, in almost all my experience, almost every client that I've worked with who has some kind of addiction, that part is using it to try and get away from the thing that feels intolerable on the inside. So it's that part, that addictive part, that's really trying to help the client to tolerate what feels intolerable. And it doesn't know any other way to do that, right? So even our most difficult and shadowed behaviors have a root of good in them. And if we can get to that root, we can see the beauty of the person that they already are. You know, I used to often talk about therapy as not a process of trying to make you better. It's a process of unraveling the crap that got thrown on top of you that is not you.
And then I would extend that, Sabrina, that it's also then accepting all of you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know, after you have figured out the crap that's not you, well, and you've taken that away, when you look at who you are, really learning to connect with and then create a relationship with. And I think that's just really the key to moving forward with that self-acceptance and that self-knowledge of all these parts. And they're all necessary and they all have a purpose in my being.
There's a really great little tiny book out there written by somebody with no titles after his name. I'm trying to remember his name right now. But it's called Love Yourself as If Your Life Depends on It.
Wow, that's beautiful.
And it's tiny. And I believe if you go online, it's free if you have Kindle.
Okay.
And the whole premise of this is you say this mantra repeatedly over and over again. I love myself. 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 Because that really is the root of loneliness.
Yeah.
How do I love myself? You know, for those of us who have spiritual practices, or when you love, if you're a parent, you know, and you have that big, huge mama or daddy love, right? For those of us who are in love with the divine, that bigness, that fullness that we feel for our loved ones or the divine, that's the amount that we need to learn how to love ourselves with. That kind of absolute adoration and self-appreciation. But I also am worthy of that big love.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
And, you know, I don't know that I'm there 24/7. You know,
it's a hard place to be.
Oh, it is. You know, when I do this practice and when I'm more conscientious of, oh, I haven't been loving myself, and start practicing this mantra over and over again of just, I love myself when I'm out walking my dog or doing something boring, like washing dishes, you know, I find that my life starts changing. For example, I hate cooking. It's just not my thing. I really love eating home cooked meals and organic, and I love eating that food. I just don't really like to cook. And so I find myself really resistant. And yet, when I am in that space of really loving myself, I will cook for myself because it's an act of love.
Yeah. So, Sabrina, what are, you know, I think you've mentioned something right now as cooking for yourself as an act of love, but what are potential gifts or treasures that you've discovered in working with loneliness, whether, you know, it's what you've observed with clients? You know, if we're talking about that, to every shadow or every challenging piece, there's a piece of light, there's a treasure, there's a gift. What would you say are some of the gifts of loneliness?
Connection, absolutely. You know, there are moments when I'm working with clients and we're working with their loneliness and it's raw and it's there and they're crying and my eyes are watery. And on the other side, we are in this right there in it together, you know?
Yeah.
Or, you know, when I'm working with I actually had a little piece come up today where my ex-boyfriend is now dating somebody new. And, you know, I had this little piece that came up where, boo, I'm still single, right? And I could feel that loneliness piece really start to come up.
Yeah.
And so rather than avoid it, I closed my eyes. I went inside and just loved on that part of myself. You know, and so it's the loneliness, the call to our spirit to connect. It's the, hey, pay attention to me.
Yeah.
Right? And if we can heed that call, if we can learn how to go inside and to really pay attention to our tender parts and learn how to love them rather than berate them or attack them for feeling lonely. You know, one of the tricks I use with people, and this is an IFS kind of technique, is when you have an emotional state, let's say loneliness, the question I'll ask people is, how long have you known this sense of loneliness? And often the answer will be forever. I'm like, okay, junior high, high school? Was it there when you were a toddler? And that's a really great way to find out this is not just about this moment.
Right.
The roots are actually much deeper. I have known this loneliness since, you know, and sometimes it'll be elementary and there will be an event. For some people, it will be, I don't remember not feeling it.
So really, this realization that this sense, this presence has been in my life for a very, very long time, and I have yet to get to know this part of me.
Right.
Deeper.
And so it gives us the opportunity to touch into that younger aspect of ourself who really needs our wise woman to come in and take care of it.
Yeah.
Right? And say, you are not alone because I am here for you. I am here. I am never going. I'm right here. And oftentimes those parts of us, you know, that hold loneliness or hold wound, when we see them in our mind's eye, we often see them in specific locations.
Yeah.
At school or at the babysitters, et cetera, where the wound happened. And that lets us know that that part is stuck in time. It actually doesn't really know that it's 2016. It's
right.
Back in 1970-something. So part of the procedure we do is we go into that time period in our mind's eye, in our creative imagination, and we get it out of there.
Yeah.
We don't want those wounded parts living where they were abused. We want them with our wise woman.
So Sabrina, if there's a woman right now who's listening and she is struggling with the experience of loneliness, what would your suggestions be for her to begin to work with this, you know, beyond seeing a therapist? If someone was just wanting to begin to explore this, or they're listening right now and this has really gotten their attention and is resonating with them, what are some suggestions you would have for them?
There are a lot of really good resources out there that I give most of my clients working with this. One of them is Tara Brock. She has a wonderful book called Radical Acceptance. It's also an audiobook. She also has a website, tarabrock.com, where she has all her teachings on there. It's free. The book that I recommended earlier, there are also two other great books that I would start with. One of them is, it's a workbook that really looks at your attachment wounding and how your formative experiences create your relationship to others and to yourself. And it's called Leaving Loneliness. It's by David Nerang. And one of my other favorite books is called True Belonging. It is a mindfulness-based approach to working with loneliness. And that is by Jeffrey Brantley and Wendy Milstein. So those are the places I think I would start with.
Okay.
The other place that I would say is just rather than running away from the loneliness, if you could sit quietly, put your hand on your heart, put your hand on your belly, breathe, and see if you can find tenderness and lovingness for that part of you that feels lonely. So the practice in a mindfulness-based psychotherapy and the practice of my own practice, which is not psychotherapy, it's just my practice of wellness, right?
Right, yeah.
Compassion is always the way to healing. And most of the time we get caught up in these judgment parts. I suck because, right?
Yeah.
And if we can have compassion on the judging parts, compassion on the wounded parts, they tend to soften. You know, there's this, you know, that for every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. If I approached you and I was aggressive and snotty and judgy, you would not open up to me. You would get judgy and snotty back.
Right.
Your defense mechanisms would go on and you would get hard and you would not let me into your inner sphere. It's the same way with our internal parts. All of our parts, all of those aspects of ourselves need to be loved and accepted and welcomed, even if they're uncomfortable. And when we approach them with compassion, they tend to soften on their own. We don't have to work so hard to get them to change. They really open.
Sabrina, can you share what some of your upcoming events or projects that, you know, listeners may be interested in or may want to participate in?
I am actually taking names down an interest level for a women's group on loneliness called Getting to the Heart of Loneliness. And that probably will start in another month or two. I've got a few people that are signed up and are looking for enough to complete a group. The other one is next week I start a meditation and mindfulness group in the mornings from 9:15 to 10:15 on Wednesdays. It is a drop-in group. And that group, while it's not specific to loneliness, it really is specific to becoming aware of our internal states and becoming kinder and gentler with our own experiences. And it is a meditation mindfulness kind of survey. So each session I will be teaching two different styles of meditation because not every style works for everybody.
Thank you so much, Sabrina. I will be putting a link to the resources that you shared and also to these upcoming events in the show notes. And if anyone wanted to get in touch with you, but what's the best way to contact you?
The best way is probably on my cell phone, which is 951-378-5868, or by my email, which is info@sabrinasantaclara.com.
Sabrina, thank you so much for being on the podcast today. I really found our conversation to be meaningful and relevant, and I know that it's going to speak to many women out there who are listening. So thank you for sharing your insights and wisdom with me today.
Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure.
Wow, I really enjoyed that conversation with Sabrina. There was so much to take away. I think one of the things that stood out for me was how she described loneliness as the experience of disconnection, and that it goes beyond connection in terms of a relationship, which of course that is part of it, but it is also about disconnection from yourself, disconnection from your community, and disconnection from something greater, something bigger or larger than yourself. And that's something larger. It can be God, it can be Buddha, it can be nature, it can be your vocation or your career, it can be your family, but if there isn't a connection to something greater than yourselves, that also contributes to the experience of loneliness. I think another thing that we talked about that really stood out for me was how the experience of not being seen is so critical in a person's experience. And for many of our clients who show up in therapy, they have never been seen. And that in order to be seen, in order to let others see you, to be vulnerable, there has to be a sense of safety. So thank you for listening. I hope you found today's episode meaningful. For show notes to today's episode, which will contain the links to the resources that Sabrina suggested, please visit www.lourdesviado.com/Women in Depth podcast. Thanks for listening and see you next time.